Hi, everybody. This is Laurie Handlers, and you're listening to Tantra Cafe, a program for spiritual enlightenment. Welcome back. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. I come to you in peace, and I'm so excited to be here today. Hey, have you ever wondered what it would be like to be a movie star? Wondered what it would be like to have somebody powdering your nose, doing sound and light checks while you're filmed? Feel the envy of people looking on? Well, that's what today's show is about. The making of the film I'm the star of, Tantric Tourists. My guests today are Alexander Snelling, the director of Tantric Tourists, and Kirsty Allison, the movie's producer from Slack Alice Films in the UK. Welcome, you two. So great to have you on my show.
Hi, Laurie.
Hello, Laurie.
Wonderful. Wonderful to have you. Wonderful to hear you again.
Thank you for having us.
You're welcome. So today we're going to talk about the making of the film that we did together. You obviously came up with the idea, and you created it, and you enrolled me into the possibility, which wasn't difficult. You didn't have to twist my arm. It was so exciting to have the idea. But let's roll back a little bit and talk about how we met and just how this idea came about. So, Alex, can you tell us a little something about how it was that we met? You know, go, roll back a little bit. I guess it was 4 years.
It was nearly 4 years. We were traveling. We were actually traveling with a camera. We'd actually at the end of a month long travel around the whole of India. Well, that actually very, very luckily and very, very almost fatefully, we'd been traveling around various places, I guess not really unexpected places for tourists, but we'd gone to Rajasthan, Agra, a lot of the places that we were actually going to be filming you in. A year later, we'd actually already been to these places, and I just bought this little camera, and we were kind of testing it out, and we made a few little films, and it was at the end of our holiday. We were feeling a bit sad to be leaving India, because I love India so much. And that's where we met this this just crazy whirling lady from New York City on a beach in Goa, in a lovely guest house in Goa, where you were a whirling dervish, and I didn't know what a whirling dervish. Well, I'd heard the term, but I didn't think I'd ever meet one. And yeah, we met one, and it was you. You're a whirling dervish, and that was. That was my first impression. My God, I've met a whirling dervish, but a whirling dervish with the most infectious laugh in the world, and who gets up at 6 a.m. to go and spin on the beach. And a unique character. And Kirsty kept in touch.
And
we remembered you. Obviously, we remembered you very, very well. And Amit and Sipu kind of faded into the background, really, the two guides from the film. But they didn't really get much of a look in when we met you. That I think it's really just over about a period of a day, like a couple of meal times, like an evening meal and a breakfast. And then either we left or you left. I can't remember who, first of all. But Kirsty kept in touch, and then we met you back in London.
Well, let me break in here for a second and say, because you're saying things like whirling dervish, you know, and I want to make sure people understand what you're talking about when you're, you know, like, I don't care. I know what you're talking about. But, you know, I had just, when I met the two of you, I was at the guest house where we met in Goa. We were in the town of Morjim, and I can't remember what the guest house's name was, but that's irrelevant. It's that we met that was the remarkable piece to it. And I had just come from Pune in India, which houses the Osho Ashram. And Osho was a very famous Tantra master who was very notorious, actually. He was more than famous. He was infamous. And people especially knew of him because he collected something like 90 Rolls Royces during the time of his life and many gold watches and things. People were very grateful for the freedom they gained when they met him, and so they would just give him things. They would buy things for him, and he loved cars and he loved watches. So, of course, you know, the Americans and the British and other people in other countries made a big to-do about it. But basically at his ashram continues on with him not alive anymore. And in his ashram, I learned whirling. It became my favorite practice, like a whirling dervish. So I met you, and I'm sure you thought it was crazy when I said I was getting up early in the morning to go whirl on the beach with next to the ocean with the buffaloes.
Oh, rather fabulous, certainly.
It affected you?
No, it was fabulous. It was quite a fabulous thing to be going
oh,
on.
Oh, really?
I thought it was crazy.
And I thought it was fabulous, yeah.
Well, Kirsty, you and I spent a lot of time together, and Alex, you spent a little time with me. My impression when I met you was that you were a little standoffish, or maybe you just didn't like me. When you say that I had this infectious laugh and you were very attracted to work with me and everything, imagine, I was so surprised by the whole thing. Maybe you don't know this, but most of the British people that I've ever met in my time of going back and forth to England to teach Tantra and to teach yoga boxing, in many festivals in England, I've been to the Healing Arts Festival and the Body, Mind, Spirit Festival. And every time I met any people from your country who became enamored of me and me them, every time I would go back to the States and then come back to England, they were nowhere to be found. So, Kirsty, when you started to keep up with me, and then Alex, when you proposed doing a film together, I was a bit shocked.
Okay. No, I mean, I have to say, in a personal way, I had been, when we met in India, I had just recovered. Actually, I just had a very big birthday. Let's put it that way. Let's leave it at that. I just celebrated my birthday. I guess it was probably around the 14th of January, something like that. My birthday's on the 8th of January, but I'd had my birthday, and what I got for my birthday was extreme food poisoning. We went up into the mountains, and we stayed at quite an expensive hill station, and I got given some prawns in the mountains, which is the last thing that you should eat in the mountains because they come from the sea. But to cut a long story short, I got quite ill, and I was just recovering when I met you, and I was pissed off that about a week of my holiday in India had been spent in bed. Not only spent in bed, but spent in bed at a very expensive hotel. So I was paying to be ill. you know, my holiday was taken from me. But and I think that when we met you, that was pretty much our lot. You know, we flew out of that place where we stayed. We flew out of there and we left for England. Basically, we went back to Delhi. I think we stayed maybe one night in Delhi. But, you know, that was the end of our holiday. And the reason that I was probably standoffish is because I just wanted a little moment to myself, you know.
Sure,
and,
sure.
I didn't want anybody to be spoiling my India. And it's funny because it's exactly that feeling of ownership that's so false, you know, and so wrong to feel like that. But I know so many people actually do feel like that, especially about India. You know, spiritual places which have a lot of meaning for people, they decide to own it, you know, and I think I actually fell into that trap, and I believed that I knew India better than anybody, and that India was mine. It was my own personal experience, and you know, people have been going to India for, well, you know, it's one of the oldest civilizations in the world, so what was I doing? But it's one of those traps. It's like, hey, well, someone's in my space, and you were in my space, and to be honest, you were, yeah, you were quite abrasive to me at that time, and I was like, hey, wow, this woman's just so loud, she's just so loud.
And, but I have an effusive laugh.
Yeah, no, absolutely, no. So there's this irony, there's this attractiveness, but there's this loudness as well.
Yeah.
And the more that I've spoken to you as we got to know you over the years and stuff, you know, that irony and that paradox is very much part of your idea of Tantra and Osho's sort of, you know, paradox, very much paradox.
And well, you know, too, it was your idea, you know, that we, that we get together and do this film and everything. And it's funny because I feel that I own India too in a certain way. And then as the film is described, Tantric Tourist is described somewhere. I just read recently, I think it's in one of these film festivals, that said, how could Laurie Handler, a self-proclaimed guru, feel that she could take people back to India and give them an experience of India when she had just been there once herself?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, Paula, there's no personal slight there, but that's exactly I think that's exactly what the film is about, or one of the themes that the film's about, and I'm quite pleased that it actually, I think it does come across like that. That's not a personal slight, but that is kind of the essence of what the film is examining, you know, is that personal feeling being distilled across many, many people. And, you know, if anybody understands that and gets that from it, then I think it's a success, because I think it should make people feel like you shouldn't want to own a country. And I think that I can, you know, I think maybe if the film is a success, then I think one of the reasons is because I understood the emotion, you know, of wanting to own something. And ultimately, it's about letting it go and not owning it. And, you know, they say if you love someone, you set them free, or if you love a country, you know, like that. So yeah. it's kind of like that. I mean, maybe that's too deep a concept to put into a short synopsis for a film in a film festival. But I don't know. I don't know how that goes down. But it does introduce an element of conflict into the film, rather than it making it seem like a sort of travelogue. One-dimensional travelogue film, which is very much isn't.
Well, Alex, it's brilliant. Whether I'm the star of the film or not, which, of course, I'm very gratified and I feel phenomenal about it, it's the film is brilliant. And so I took nothing personally, because actually the fact that the two of you, unbeknownst to me, you know, two British people that I met in India at a guest house, not only kept up with me, which was beyond my wildest dreams, but also kept up with me and then wanted to make a film with me. That was the most amazing. That was how great could that be? I knew, at some point you and I spent so much time together when I kept coming back and forth to England before we went to India. Or we spent so much time on the film that I felt absolutely fine about however it would turn out. And I knew you were going to put a slant on it, so I didn't take it personally at all.
Yeah, no, and we knew that you knew that. And it was, yeah, I think that's what made it work. And I think a lot of people wonder how can that possibly have been. Or not from our point of view, but how can you, Laurie, how can you have allowed people to film you doing that? But that's the beauty, and that's your power, is the ability to be honest when so many people would want to hide their emotions. And I actually think that's a very powerful attribute. And it's, I guess it's to do with self-confidence and being, you know, at one with yourself and knowing that being yourself in front of anybody or any camera or any microphone isn't really going to harm you. And, you know, I'm not there yet, you know. I wish I was. I think you are. And I think that's also, ultimately, at the end of the film, you know, it does actually come around to being a film about, you know, an uplifting film, a film with a positive message, rather than just, you know, just laughing at people. And,
So we're going to take a pause here for a moment. I just want to let people know that you're listening to Tantra Cafe, a program for spiritual enlightenment. My guests today are from Slack Alice Films, the director and producer and the principals of Slack Alice Films, a film company in the UK. We're going to hear more about the film, what the film is actually about, and a little bit of more about their backgrounds when we return. But first, I want to know if you're wondering what book you should read to jumpstart your sex life and increase your happiness. Try my book, Sex and Happiness, The Tantric Laws of Intimacy. This short, easy-to-read book will make you laugh at yourself and possibly even make you cry as you discover my tantric secrets for happiness and how they apply to you. In the book, I begin with the 10th law, make love in the unknown, and then work you all the way through laws 1 through 9 to teach you how to be in the unknown, fresh, every moment of every day. Sex and happiness puts the innocence and love back into sex and gives Tantra the respect it deserves. It's only $19.99 in paperback or $14.99 ebook. You can go to sexandhappiness.com to order your copy of Sex and Happiness by me, Laurie Handlers. That's sexandhappiness.com. Okay, we're back, and my guests today are Alexander Schnelling and Kirsty Allison, who are the director and producer of Tantric Tourist, the film that we shot in India about me taking people to India for the first time, for their first experience, and what I say, I bring them to learn surrender. But let's find out a little bit about Alex. I want to know a little bit more about your background first before we actually get into what happened and the shenanigans and everything that we went through in filming. But tell me what, like, how did you even come up with this idea or qualify to make a film? Like, do you make other films? What is Slack Alice Films? Tell us a little bit about that.
Slack Alice Films, I've made the one of the only routes into, I want to make the rest of my life making feature films. And in order to do that, you have to make a feature film. And this is the closest that we've come to doing it. And I think it's a pretty close run thing. You know, I think it's more of a feature film than a documentary. But obviously I needed to do that. And that's the biggest, really the biggest step, or so I thought. The biggest step in any filmmaker's career is their first feature. People go around making short films. A lot of those short films are funded with more money than the money that it cost us to make this film in its entirety from beginning to end, including all the legal fees and the music and everything. In India, on the road in India, and it's a feature-length film, a lot of short films cost more than this to make. I don't know why, but I've never been particularly successful at getting funding, and getting funding for a first feature film is almost impossible. You know, and some people do it, but, you know, maybe only 100 people per year, maybe 50 people, you know, in the entire world, I'm talking, to make a first feature film. The second, if your first feature film is a success, then the second one is a little bit easier. But making the first one is the huge hurdle. That is the absolute leap of faith that somebody has to take. So you and your journey around India, I love India, and I've got a feeling for India, and I have a feeling for comedy, I think. And it didn't seem like there wasn't even a choice. It didn't even seem like a choice. The only choice was, can we actually get this together? Because I think when we finally, when it finally came together, it came together all very quickly.
I was in England. I was in England, and you called me and you said, I told you I was leaving. I was on my way to Heathrow. We had seen each other already. You came to something I was doing in a flat.
Yeah, yeah. We
came and filmed you in Primrose Hill doing a workshop, and we kind of brought it home and edited it and just thought, wow, this could be really, really hilarious. And this has kind of got the makings of something that would enable Alex to kind of get to India and show it in a two-dimensional way, which is kind of it created the perfect opportunity to kind of give another dimension as a British filmmaker.
Right.
To India, really, something that he's passionate about. So I think that was the reasoning.
So we had done that, and then I was doing a longer workshop in the countryside, in the English countryside, at some beautiful old manor house. And I was coming back from there. I was on the train or the bus, and I got a call from you, and you said, where are you? And I said, I'm just about to get on the tube to go to Heathrow. And you said, let us pick you up. You said to me, we're picking you up. Get out at Ealing. we want to pick you up. We have to have a conversation with you. So I said, okay. I got out at Ealing. You picked me up, and you drove me the rest of the way to Heathrow. And we sat down in one of those little...
Oh, God, yeah, I've totally forgotten about that. Yeah, yeah.
Forgotten about that.
We sat down in one of those little coffee places.
We sold you the idea on that journey.
Right, and you were standing in line with me, the big line that people, the queue that people stand in when they're waiting to check in their plane tickets. Wow, you were standing there with me going, look, I'm just going to be really honest with you. I want to make a film with you. Yeah. And I went, okay.
Then we had like 2 months between that happening and you actually leaving for India. So we then had to get it all together, really, and kind of work out how it was going to happen and get the cash together. And we had to get our crew together. And
well, I'd love, Laurie, what do you take for your memory? Because I don't remember that at all. I do now, but I'd remembered the Primrose Hill thing, but I'd totally forgotten that.
Yeah.
Totally forgotten that.
Well, then what happened was I went home and I already had 13 or 14 people who were going to come on the tour with me to India. And my thinking was this, I wanted to bring people to experience what I had experienced in India, which was letting go of everything that I know about anything, the way I get things done, the way I travel, the way I need things a certain way. When I was in India, my experience was to just let go of the controls, let go of the steering wheel. There's nothing I can do. This is a big country. It's vast. People here want to please me, but they can't always do it, but they're going to say yes anyway. I'm going to be frustrated as can be if I want to, or I can just let go and enjoy the ride. And that was what I experienced on the first trip when I met you two. I was just coming to the end of the trip in Goa, and I had experienced all of that, just letting go, finding out that nothing is what it seems there. Everything is different and completely the opposite, or like on a different planet from where I come from. And it's a really good spiritual exercise in being quiet and letting go. So then I set out to take these other people, and you said, well, let's film it. So I had to go back and get the release forms. I had to get release forms from people and ask them if they wanted to be filmed. And all but one, everybody who was signed up to go on the trip said yes. And what did they know? They didn't know you.
Yeah. I mean, that was just amazing. I mean, really, in retrospect, that's just absolutely incredible that complete strangers, I mean, that's just testament to how much they trust you, that they kind of agreed to be filmed by some people they knew very little about, really.
I remember I wrote a long email professing my love for India and the experience that they were going to experience. And I think that helped. I hope it helped anyway.
The email that you sent was phenomenal. The email you sent was phenomenal. And, you know, there were also people coming on that trip who didn't know me. They were coming as a result of someone else telling them about me. And it was really quite amazing. And whatever you did to set them straight, we had a lot of email communications ahead of time. Whatever you did and whatever I did to get them ready to go and be filmed in such a strange environment, and I say strange lightly because I don't want anyone to think for a moment that the difference and the diversity of India being very strange to Westerners, let's say, I wouldn't want that to deter anybody from going there, because it's still the most amazing place to go and learn, have a spiritual lesson of learning surrender, of learning to be with what is, to have compassion for self as self is struggling through whatever, through trying to get some hot water.
Oh gosh, I remember one evening at the end of the tour with you, and it had been a really long, long, long trip. We'd been traveling for a long time, and someone, one of the members of the party, they didn't want to come out for dinner that evening, and they were looking down the menu in the hotel, and they were saying, please order me some food. I just can't kind of decide what I want. And there was a brain curry on the menu, and that was just it was just the fact that that kind of thing, you get faced with that kind of thing quite regularly there, and it's just, you just deal with it, and it's
was
fun.
That not prawn curry?
No, it was a brain curry.
It was a brain curry.
But what kind of brain could it have been? They don't eat cow. What kind of brain could it have been? Brain curry.
I've got no idea. Maybe it was a prawn, but it was just spelt as brain.
Yeah, I can't. They don't eat brains.
I was thinking, what is it? Is it a monkey brain? Is it what?
No.
It doesn't seem like they'd eat that in India, but I remember the incident, and I remember her starting to cry. Like, she burst out in tears and said, oh, I can't eat this. I can't eat anymore. And she went to her room and pretty much freaked out on the last night we were there.
That was messed up, that final night, yeah. I mean, I was tired.
Oh,
I was very, very tired. And, you know, it's one apart from many, 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 not millions, but hundreds, thousands of decisions that you have to make while you're making a film, there just is never enough time. I mean, and it's just fantastic training, because I think more than anything else, it's about making decisions when you're under stress and when you're tired and when you don't have enough time to consider, you know, when you cannot, you just simply cannot go, oh, I'll sleep on that. You have to make a decision. And I think that's basically the biggest learning lesson that we've had, really making a film so quickly, because we did make this film in 9 days. And your techniques of tiredness and, you know, wearing people down to experience, of course, because we were filming that hit us as well. So by the end of the trip, we were absolutely shattered. And, you know, and I've learned, I think I'm still recovering now. Really, no, I actually do still think I'm recovering now. I think that, you know, getting up at Varanasi in the morning and the exhilaration, but the complete and utter, I'm about to go down with pneumonia feeling, but this is an amazing experience I'm going to remember for the rest of my life, but I feel sick with nausea.
But Alex, that's exactly how everybody feels in India. They're at some point on everyone's trip in India, they're sick. At least for 24 hours, and they feel the same way. They're at the Taj Mahal. The last time I took people, which was about a year ago, we were at the Taj Mahal, and this beautiful woman, probably a model, striking type character, was so ill at the Taj Mahal that she didn't want to go in. She was laying outside the Taj Mahal. And I begged her, I said, please, you're going to so regret coming all the way to this magnificent country and missing the biggest thing that people come for, the Taj Mahal. You've got to let us carry you in. And so she did. And we carried her in so she could see the magnificent Taj. And I took a picture of her in front of it too, so she'd remember that. And she hates the picture, but believe me, that, you know, everybody gets sick there. They're down for the count for some amount of time. So they have the exact thought you had.
That last night was really, it went on for us. You went on to Pune, didn't you? But we just went on and experienced Amit's father and his his financial methods, which wasn't really something that we really wanted to be doing, or spending an entire day visiting most of the banks on Connaught Circus. With Amit's father, who insisted on taking cash. But, and more than tired, more than tired.
Sure.
I'm actually still amazed that we actually came away with a film. I do think it suffered a little bit towards the end. I think after Varanasi, because for me, Varanasi was the peak.
But Alex, the footage of Khajuraho is amazing. the footage and the stuff with the schools and everything. We're gonna break here for a moment and we'll come back. When we come back, I have a few questions to ask you about Tantra, and also I want to talk about the actual what we do cover in the film, because I want people to see this film, you know, and so do you. So just let us break for a moment. If you just tuned in, you're listening to Tantra Cafe. This is Laurie Handlers, your host, and I am so pleased and proud to have my guests today, Alexander Schnelling and Kirstie Allison from Slack Alice Films. They're the people, the director and the producer who made the film Tantra Cafe, the film that I am the star of, me and my merry musketeers who braved India with me. And if you're somebody who loves adventure and would like to create more adventure in your life, then join me and Gino Alegria on our Red Hot Tantra Tour to India this January 2010. Speaking of India, you'll study 6 days of Red Hot Tantra in a palace in Ajmer, in the state of Rajasthan, India's most colorful state. You'll receive 6 days of classroom instruction and then practice together with your beloved in the privacy of your own palace accommodations. When the course is over, you'll visit the holy city of Pushkar. You'll see the world's greatest tribute to romance, the Taj Mahal. And you'll tour the world-famous Kama Sutra temples in Khajuraho. There you'll have ample opportunity to see the temples close up and even get to meditate inside. When you return to Delhi, you'll tour the city or shop in the Paragans, one of the world's oldest markets. If you'd like to stay on in India, we have a variety of tours you could choose from. For more information about the Red Hot Tantra Palace Tour and course in India, call me at 202-686-7440. That's 202-686-7440. Or write to me, Laurie, at butterflyworkshops.com. So we're back with my guests today, Slack Alice Films, Alex and Kirstie. And we're talking about the film that we made called Tantric Tourists in India. And Alex and Kirstie, I mean, okay, so you met me, but did you have any interest in Tantra at all before you met me?
No. In a word.
Well, there we have it.
No, I mean, but we could now have this discussion. I mean, you could have this discussion for hours now, but the thing that we've discovered over the last, particularly since the film was finished, is that, you know, we now have a very different opinion of what Tantra is, than from previously, because there is this false notion of what Tantra is about, and it's incredibly I don't know what the word is, it's not biased, it's just wrong. It's a misconception, it's a misperception of what it is. And you know, we've had incredible problems trying to get past that, because I think a lot of people are frightened by it. And I fully admit that I don't think I was frightened of it. I just thought it was a little bit funny, a little bit odd.
In like cheesy, sexy, cheeky, you would call it in the UK?
What word would you say?
I think it's you know, from speaking about it, I've always had an interest in it. I've done a lot of yoga over the years, but I'd kind of, I think you learn a lot from sort of chatting about projects to various people, you know, at parties and stuff like that. And the kind of reaction I've had from a lot of men in particular has been like, Tantra, why would I want to do that? You know, it's like this idea of, inadequacy that it can bring out in people. It's like you're basically telling them that they're not perfect at sex, which like to think
they're
that
not.
Well, they like to think that they're the kings of sex. So that's kind of the immediate issue, and the film industry is pretty male. So you've got that to kind of fight against before. I mean, we at one point, this has been, you know, we've been 3 years in the making of this film, so it's been through all sorts of embryonic kind of shells, and it's shed its skin sort of several times to get to the state that it's in today. But one of those phases was the actual title of the film, because we discovered that Tantra is a word that a lot of email servers don't particularly like, because they think that you might be selling them Viagra.
Right.
But that was kind of one of our first things. We were like, oh my God, how are we going to market this film if we can't even get through people's firewalls? So, I mean, we kind of put it out there. We did some focus groups on different names. But we kind of just came back to Tantric Tourist because it's what it does on the tin. And it kind of tells you exactly what the film's about, I think. And I think there is a kind of, I think the New Age community is so pervasive now as well. It's very much the sport of the middle classes, and it's a very, very accessible thing. So I think, you know, as kind of the hippie generation kind of filtrate to be so mainstream, that it's kind of, I think it's, we've kind of been riding this surf of sort of acceptance, really. So it's been quite lucky.
Well, let me say something to you about that. You know, it's interesting that, first of all, Tantra is becoming more mainstream in that, you know, Oprah has talked about it and various, I mean, Sting, the singer, had talked about it, but now he's reneged that he ever talked about it. It's very funny. And now there's a new Tantra champion who is, what's her name? She was in the movie The Guru, Heather Graham.
Right, yeah.
She is now the new Tantra champion. And so while it's becoming more mainstream and more people are seeking out information about it, and it's much more readily available everywhere than it had been, at least in the West, it's also picking up steam in that other way, you know, in that hidden and semi-prostitution way. Both things are growing at the same time.
Well, the Eat, Sleep, Pray film that Julia Roberts.
Love, Pray.
Roberts, they're making that. That's a mega bucks film. That's going on right now. And I think there's kind of people, when they recognize that there's an interest in something, they'll start exploring it financially. So maybe we're kind of riding that wave. Let's hope so.
It's great. Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit about what the film actually has in it. You know, what the aspects of the film are. Because I know you're following me through India, but we haven't really told anything about where we go and kind of the things that happen. For example, I mean, for me, one of the funniest scenes in the film is, and it's also profound, is when we're on top of a mountain doing what's called the Shakti Shiva Mudra, which is where we're connecting the female earth energy with the male heaven energy. And we're doing this beautiful set of movement that looks a little bit like Tai Chi. And Alex, somehow you have captured this set of white monkeys that are sitting all around us as if we're the show and they're the audience. And the monkeys are scratching their heads and they're scratching their butts and they're going, what are these people doing? And that scene to me, that's the one that stands out the most in my mind. It's so hilarious.
I think a lot of people love those monkeys, yeah. But no, it's just a whirlwind tour. I can't tell you how many hours I've spent looking at the images from this film. Really so much. And also, not only that, but I know you quite well, Laurie, but the other guys in the film, you know, we've only met them for those 9-day periods, but I know them so well. You know, I know Randall, Catherine, Delwood, like old friends. And it's just crazy spending, editing a film, you know, what's 9 days in the shooting has been so long in the edit suite. And I've actually, since the film was finished, I've then still been watching it because I'm having to convert it to different formats and stuff. the reason I'm saying this is because I was doing some technical work on the film a while ago, and I was watching it from the other side of the room. I was sitting on the sofa, you know, in our flat where you've been, and I was looking at it from a way away. And it is incredibly visual film. You know, there's and a lot of that's, most of that is down to India. It's not like I'm some amazing cinematographer or anything, but I did learn how to shoot India when we first met you a year before. So, you know, you learn certain tricks and how India sort of behaves in front of a camera for you, and what the best sort of methods to actually capture the reality of it all are, which helped us sort of decide how we were going to actually shoot it the real time with you guys. But it's incredibly colourful. I mean, it's got elephants, monkeys,
cows,
yeah, fish. donkeys.
Don't forget, it has cobras. It has
it's got animals in it. It's got, you know, it's got pink cities, it's got purple mountains, it's got the desert, it's got, you know, the Taj Mahal, which really is amazing, an amazing place. And it's got Varanasi, which actually I used an excerpt from the film in Varanasi in a presentation I did in Mumbai earlier this year. And it really is just just an amazing place. I mean, I have to go back there. I really, really want to go back there because we weren't there long enough, and it's one of my favorite places in the world. But it's just stunning. It's just, I don't know what it is about that place. It's actually the first place I ever went to in India, but I think it has the same effect on most people when they're there.
Well, that was where we saw the place where they were burning the bodies. We saw the most amazing things, and then we saw the crematoriums where they have their funeral pyres. And if you remember, I was singing "Light My Fire" by The Doors.
Yeah, they wouldn't give us that. The Doors wouldn't let us use that track, unfortunately. And it was going to cost them like £2,000 to license you singing "Happy Birthday" as you went down the Ghats as well. So
Did you know that?
No.
No, because we had to take. I mean, maybe you noticed the when you watched the film recently at Fort Lauderdale, and. Well, it's got my voice on it, but we've had to take a part of the scene from Varanasi out where you were singing, or no, you weren't singing "Happy Birthday." Everyone was singing "Happy Birthday" to you because we were not allowed to use that song.
That's amazing. That's ridiculous.
You might have noticed, but it was right in the middle of the, you know, you probably didn't notice because it's only a short scene, but it's, that's gone. There's been all sorts of journeys associated with this film, but yeah, Varanasi and then Khajuraho, obviously with all the tantric statues and then finally the film ends in a village, an Indian village, not the most, destitute or, really, it's not a typical Indian village, really, because most Indian villages really do struggle for food and water and any kind of way to make a living. But it's still an Indian village and a very colourful, amazing Indian village.
Well, so, it got lucky. That Indian village got lucky because it has the Kama Sutra temples in it. I don't know if you know this. You know, when Mahatma Gandhi was the president or the premier, well, prime minister of India. Gandhi had sex issues of his own, in case you didn't know this. I mean, here he was in a full marriage with his wife, and he chose celibacy, but he chose sometimes to sleep with consorts next to him to see if he could stay celibate. All kinds of stories about Gandhi. And Gandhi wanted to cover the temples. He wanted to bulldoze tons of dirt and cover the temples and make them into mountains. He was embarrassed by the sexuality on those temples. It's a good thing he didn't win that.
That's British education, I expect, Laurie.
Well, we need to just take another break for a second, and when we come back, we're going to come to some completion, but we're going to talk just a little bit more about these parts that had to be cut and pasted and different things. But here's some breaking news. Tantric Tourists, the film that I'm starring in, the film we're discussing, a documentary about 10 people seeking enlightenment who hire me to take them on an adventure in India. This film, Tantric Tourists, can soon be purchased in DVD. If you become a fan of Tantric Tourists on Facebook and find out how, you will find out how to get your copy and you'll be able to get a discount. You can visit www.tantrictourists.com for more information. The breaking news is that Tantric Tourists is featured on November 12th at the Nevada Film Festival. Sorry, November 21st at the Nevada Film Festival in Las Vegas, Nevada. And if you want to join me there, I'll be there. I'll be at the film festival doing a little exercise before the film. That's at 5:50 p.m. on November 21st in Las Vegas, Nevada. Go to NevadaFilmFestival.com. So we're back, and I'm here with the director of the film, Alexander Snelling, and Kirsty Allison, the producer of the film, and we're discussing our crazy time together shooting this amazing film in India. So, you guys, this news you just told me about taking Happy Birthday out, first of all, isn't Happy Birthday in the public domain?
Why do you? It's owned by two old ladies.
Who's that? But it's actually owned by Warner Brothers now. So it wasn't actually the real Happy Birthdays, but it was a kind of, they were school teachers and they wrote a song that was similar to Happy Birthday, which basically has kind of emerged, it has worked its way into record companies' hands and has become Happy Birthday to You, the folk song that we all know and love. And they let it go for sort of £2,000 a segment. So,
wow.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, well, I heard that you could have 30 seconds of a song.
Not for a feature film.
No, that's a complete fallacy in any way.
Because I thought I should have just done...
No.
Light my fire.
Light my fire. No, that is... if you notice, you don't hear much Doors music on TV.
No. You know,
I don't think you'd hear any Doors music on a commercial. Over Jim's dead body, and obviously he's still alive in Paris, so he's not dead yet, but he's that's just not going to happen. But we emailed them to say, oh, hi, we just used a little bit of a refrain from Light My Fire, and we thought we'd better ask you if that would be all right, kind of expecting them to say yeah.
Sounds like a cool project, you know. We thought that they might be on the independent side, but
and they actually emailed me back. I think 2 days before the original screening in London here, where you came, just with one word, no.
Wow.
That was, you know, not. There's nothing to do with money. That was just like, you know, Jim says no, sorry, bye. But you know, that's understandable. I understand that more than the Happy Birthday thing. But the public domain thing, no music is, you cannot use anything.
Didn't know.
If it's owned by somebody.
I didn't know that.
I think there's reasons and grounds, there's a thing called fair usage. If something is in the background of a documentary and it's being played while someone's being interviewed, that might fall under the category of fair usage, but if it's being used as a element of the film and as an element of the story, no way. That had to go, which was a shame.
Well, let's come to round to how the film is doing, I'm not the director. I didn't make the film. You made the film. It is a full feature film. It's an amazing documentary, mockumentary, whatever you want to call it. It's very funny to me, and I'm in it, and if there's any fun being made, it's being made of me, and it's marvelous. So it's been in a variety of film festivals. How has it done? I know it opened in England the first time. It was in London. I was there, and I think, I don't even know what it won there. Tell us what the film's been winning and where it's been showing.
In the UK, it won the best first UK feature at the East End Film Festival, which was quite fitting. It's the East End of London, but they have a very Eastern slant. and on that particular year, their version of the East was you know, the East as in India. I think this year the East is Russia, so they're, but you know, they kind of focus on the East. But that's that's not a you know, it's a rung down from London and Edinburgh, but it's still a great film festival.
It's the biggest independent film festival in the UK, pretty much now. I think it's a pretty well respected film festival.
Yeah, no, it's a great festival, and it's the right type of a festival for this film. It's played in Mexico, where it won a Golden Palm. We couldn't make that. We'd love to have been able to do it, but these festivals don't pay for you to go and see.
Right.
It won a
Spirit of Independence.
Yeah, Spirit of Independence at the FLIF, the one you went to.
Fort Lauderdale. Yeah, a few weeks ago.
The Nevada Best First Time Director, which I like a lot because it's not a documentary award. That's across the whole festival.
Really?
You know, yeah. So that's competing with any other feature films, first feature films, whatever. So I mean, that for me, that really means a hell of a lot, because the award in London, there were four other films it was up against, but the Nevada one is you know, that's the whole festival, and there's a lot of good films there. So that's really, I love that. And we're still waiting to hear from a whole batch. I think the news will keep coming in, and if you listen to Laurie's show, I'm sure she'll update you. We've got...
We had it in Cannes as well, didn't we? Cannes Film Festival, the remarkable Cannes in a van.
Yeah, there's a whole back, there's a raft of about 15 or 20 different festivals that I doubt it's going to get into all of them, but we hope it will certainly get into some of them, most of which are like the early part of next year, first part of next year.
Great. And then there's the big question. Well, I just want to say something about Cannes in a van, because when you say it was in Cannes, and the Cannes and the Van festival, I saw a picture of that. You have to tell me if this is true or not. I think you were there. Is that where they pull a van up, like an actual moving a van, like a truck, and they open up the back doors of the truck, and there's a little screen that rolls down, and then they put out a bunch of folding chairs and people sit down on the street, like by the Carlton Hotel or something in Cannes?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a riot. I mean, it's very anarchic, sort of British, sort of very independent film festival. And we were one of two features that was selected to play this year. And it was a real privilege to be at such an amazing kind of thing that is Cannes, which is so full of desperation and glamour and everything all at once.
And did people actually sit down and watch the film on the street there?
My God, yeah. It was just amazing. We had Grace Jones, like, waving at us when it was playing, and loads of people sitting down. And it was great to just be around and kind of be a part of that in some way, very independently. So, yeah, that was really enjoyable.
That's great. That's really great. Well, I'm going to Vegas this weekend. I am really excited. I'm looking forward to it. I promise you I will do you justice when I take your award for you, when I capture that beautiful Best First Director trophy for you, whatever they give you, who knows what it's going to be. Also, by the way, you should just know that if you have something you want me to say, you should send that to me post-haste.
Okay, no, thank you. Thank you so much. And
something you want me to say on your behalf, do you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Now listen, so the big question of the hour here is the DVD. When are people going to see the famous Tantric Tourist DVD starring none other than myself?
Laurie Handler is the legend. Unfortunately, I think it's going to be 2010. I'm really sorry to say that. I've kind of been spending the majority of my time on getting the rights for the music cleared for that. And and it's being mastered now. It's being mastered. We've got six extras on the DVD. Mm-hmm. So we've got a making of documentary which Kirsty's made. That's nearly half an hour long, which is also very
congratulations.
So that's half an hour long. We've also got a sort of couple of deleted scenes. You know, some more of the beauty of India.
We've got a tantric exercise
in there
with you as well.
Do you remember the Rishi isometrics?
Yes.
That's on there.
A bonus. This is in front of the Taj Mahal. In front of the
It's the one in Varanasi. In the hotel.
Okay. So there's actually a you know, like in terms of DVD extras, there's really a lot of value on them. Good. And I've been getting all of that together, but it's just legally, just clearing the legals is just takes forever.
Okay.
So it's all ready to go. The cover's finished. The printing's done, and it's basically going to be all basically running it over here in the UK. But we don't have a DVD distributor. It's just run by Amazon. So it's just us and Amazon. So it's going to be available on Amazon. It's not, you know, you're not going to have to go and search out, you know, some little
That's
shop
great.
There.
But That's we will, great.
You know, it's going straight to the source, you know. So
wonderful.
Just watch it's probably a month from now, but we're going to be in Africa. So we've got to actually, they will send us one copy for us to watch and say, okay, green light. And when we hit the green light, it's on sale. So
there we go. Wonderful. Well, listen, we got to sign off now. So I want to thank you so much for being my guests, Alexander and Kirsty from Slack Alice Films in the UK. SlackAliceFilms.com. Go to TantricTourist.com. Come to TantraCafe.com. I mean, we got a lot of .coms here to advertise to people. I really thank you both so much for being my guests, and I believe that we have exhibited for people, if they've ever wondered what it's like to be a movie star in a documentary and be followed around and have their nose powdered in a foreign country and have it all turn out, I believe we've made our point today.
Well, maybe we should do return the compliment. If your listeners wish, we could interview you. About really what it
was. You did. You interviewed me like crazy on film.
Oh yeah, sorry, I forgot about that. Yeah.
Thank you so much, you two. I'm gonna say namaste now. Namaste from Tantra Cafe.
Namaste, bye bye.
Namaste. This is Laurie Handlers signing off. Cafe, a program for spiritual enlightenment. Stay tuned next week when we talk to a couple about how Tantra has rejuvenated their entire marriage and their spice and love for each other. I'll see you then. Namaste.